Regional affairs will now come to order. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum. Present is Representative Peacock, Representative Mark Newman, Representative Sharon Cisna, Representative Woody Salmon, Co-Chair Thomas, and myself, Co-Chair Olson. First order of business today will be Senate Bill 265, and it will be presented by Senator Stedman's office.
Kim.
Good morning, Kim. Oh, I know Kim.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the House Committee Regional Affairs Committee. For the record, my name is Kim Carno, staff to Senator Bert Stedman. I'm joined by Deputy Commissioner Tom Boutin from the Department of Revenue to present SB 265 for your consideration. SB 265 seeks to increase the bond authority of the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank from its current statutory cap of $500 million to $750 million. The last time the bond bank's authority was increased was in 2003, when it was increased from $300 million to $500 million. The Alaska Municipal Bond Bank helps municipalities by lowering the borrowing costs for the participants. The bond bank achieves this result by pooling bond issues, creating economies of scale, and leveraging the borrowing power and creditworthiness of the state of Alaska. Since its inception in 1975, the bank has helped Alaskan communities secure over $800 million in financing for public works projects. Over that same time, the bond bank has returned $26.9 million in excess earnings to the state. This year, the bond bank will be returning a $652,000 dividend to the citizens of Alaska. Last year, the authority issued $123 million in bonds to Alaskan communities, and in that process, saved those communities $16.7 million in issuance and interest costs. For example, bond money was used for school construction in Kodiak, Petersburg, Sitka, and Ketchikan, harbor improvements in Adak, a hospital in Juneau, street improvements in North Pole, an ice rink in Palmer, roof repairs for the Anchorage Performing Arts Center, and refinanced at lower rates outstanding bonds for Fairbanks, Cordova, Unalaska, and the Northwest Arctic Borough. In conclusion, as of this month, the bond bank has approximately $80 million in pending applications and only $50 million in borrowing capacity. Without this increase, we will not be able to take advantage of the program. This completes my presentation on the bill. The Department of Revenue is here to answer technical questions, and I thank you for your support of this legislation.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair. Kim, I was just looking at the fiscal note. It says $50,000 and $100,000. But in the bottom, it says the bond bank is a self-supporting corporation of the state. Contractual costs noted above reflects an anticipated continued increase in the bond bank communities. The costs incurred will be directly correlated to the future increased borrowing of the bond bank due to the borrowing gap. All costs will be funded from bond bank fund earnings. This doesn't come from the general fund then.
Tom Boutin, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. No, comes from bond proceeds, bond earnings. The Municipal Bond Bank has one part-time employee, Devin Mitchell, who's also the state debt manager. Most of the costs of the bond bank are issuance costs, bond counsel, financial advisor, an occasion trustee, printing costs for official statements. About two-thirds of the bond bank costs are those costs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? We have nobody online to testify. Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to testify on this bill? What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I make motion that we move Senate Bill 265, version 24-LS1593/A from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Any opposition? It's out here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kim, Tom. Next, we'll be taking up House Bill 429. Is there anybody here that would like to address that, Representative Kroc? It's our intention to move it out of committee and on to Labor and Commerce. Is there any objection?
Mr. Chairman, no.
Representative Thomas.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I make a motion that we move HB 429, version 24-LS1362/A from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Any objections? It's on its way to Labor and Commerce. Thank you, Representative Croft.
Crofty, thank you for your eloquent...
Yes, thanks for keeping it under 20 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Talk about succinct.
I'd be mad at it.
The final item on the calendar today is House Bill 299. And we've had a subcommittee that's put a lot of work into a CS. Representative Cott, would you like to...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you indicated, the subcommittee worked real hard on this one. What I think is a proposal, and commend it to the committee for their consideration. There is CS version Y we need to adopt. I explained changes from the original version.
Was that a motion to adopt?
I'll make a motion to adopt the committee's recommendation, version Y.
I don't believe we have anybody online to testify, do we?
There is somebody in Kenai.
Oh, okay. Good morning, Kenai.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Shane Horan. I'm the assessor for the Kenai Peninsula Borough, and I'm sorry, I just arrived, and I haven't had an opportunity to review the new language as proposed. So if I may, be on hold for now.
Okay, how about Steve Vincent?
We should probably absolutely...
Mr. Chairman, I'm here. I'm here to answer any questions for the committee, sir.
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot. Representative Cott, I wonder if you could give us just a brief thumbnail.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to call Sharice up since she's kind of been working with us from the sponsor staff. But in essence, what this bill does is it increases, as we had before the amount tax exemption for senior citizens, $250,000. We've grandfathered in those existing citizens and went to a needs base thereafter. But Sharice, you can.
Thank you, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sharice Millett. I'm staff representative Coring. The bill in its original form just made the $250,000 exemption straight across the board. After we looked at it and saw some concerns of some of the municipalities, we decided to do the CS and make it based on needs. The main points of the CS is that we went ahead and raised it for the disabled veterans and the widowers to $250,000 straight across the board. We grandfathered those existing people that are now receiving the $150,000 exemption, those that are 65 that have applied for the exemption, they're now receiving it. They're grandfathered in and will continue to receive that exemption. The next thing we did is we made a needs-based requirement for those participating from 2007 forward. And we have two different levels of needs-based requirements. One is for the $150,000 level and the other one is for the $250,000 level. We mirrored the senior care exemption language. Those that meet the requirement for senior care receive the $250,000 exemption. Those that have the income of double the senior care exemption will receive the $150,000 exemption. And that's basically what the CS does.
Representative Sussman?
Mr. Chair, I guess I have questions both for the sponsor of the CS and also for Mr. Van Zandt. I guess some of the questions that I'd like to ask is these changes are basically based on AS 47.45.320A3. Which means the senior care model, kind of, is what you could say. And I guess we had some real questions about how that plays out, what happens in terms of the people who qualify for the program now and you put it on to needs-based, what happens to the people who aren't needs-based? Who manages it? Is it the state? Is it the municipalities? And what are the costs? What are the details on that? Because I didn't pick up on that in this. So could I ask you and also ask Mr. Van Zandt, would that be satisfactory, Mr.
Certainly.
Chair? Thank you.
The way that the senior care, those that would be grandfathered in, those would be people that are now have applied for the exemption and are receiving the exemption. They would just continue on, and it would be the municipalities. Those are the people that know who are on the books now for getting that exemption. They would just continue on.
But Mr. Chair, but they're not now. It's not based on needs based, right?
Right.
So anybody that's on now is on, but they are on it at 150 or 250.
Through the chair, Representative Sisnett, those that are receiving the $150,000 exemption today,
okay,
that have applied for it and have been granted that exemption,
okay,
they will continue to receive that exemption for the duration.
Okay.
And then starting in 2007, the effective date of the bill, those people that turn 65 that aren't receiving, that would like to apply for the exemption, would then be based on needs.
Okay.
Is that clear?
All right. Yeah. Great. And then if we could have an answer from Mr. Van Zandt.
Mr. Van Zandt?
Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. For the record, my name is Steve Van Zandt. I'm state assessor with the Department of Commerce. I believe the representative is asking, who's going to be handling this. This would be handled on the local level as far as estimated costs. We haven't run an analysis of that. But obviously, it's going to require the local assessor's office reviewing their IRS income tax returns in order to ascertain whether or not they meet the eligibility requirements for income. I do note that the changes talk about individuals' income as opposed to household income, which causes us some consternation. Back in the 70s when this program first started, there was an income criteria. It only lasted for a year before they changed it, but it was a $10,000 household income. And all the times that we've looked at this bill since then, we've looked at household income as opposed to individual income. Whether the committee wants to take that up or not, I am not sure. As far as the individuals currently in the program, it's my understanding that those individuals would continue to get the $150,000 exemption. I don't know the answer. If they die, the exemption goes away. But I'm not sure what happens if they sell their property and move to another house or another city or another borough. It's going to be difficult to follow that exemption around the state. So I'm not sure what the intent is there. And I'm sure some of the other assessors may have some questions, but in a nutshell, that's the way I understand it. The existing, what do they have, 14,000 applicants or participants in the program would maintain the current exemptions. And I assume that would be true except for disabled veterans. They'd be automatically bumped up to 250,000, although it's not clear to me that they would automatically be bumped to 250,000. But I think that's right, without an income criteria on that. So there are we still have some questions, but I hope that answers the questions.
A follow-up also. And I guess the other question is, can you please explain the exemption for the widow or widower? The age requirements and that, because I wasn't quite sure if they had to be a certain age and when they qualified and when they would not qualify.
Through the chair, Representative Sisna, the senior citizen exemptions start out with seniors for 65 years of age and older. Back in the 80s, they introduced the widowers and the disabled veterans. The widowers basically said that if a widow or widower of a participant was 60 years old, that they could continue the exemption. But if they were not 60, they had to wait until they turned 60. The thought being that the participant was 65 years of age, that the widow or widower of the deceased participant would be in close proximity to that age. The disabled veteran was introduced shortly after that, and the same thought process followed along was that, well, if the disabled veteran were to pass away, the widow or widower of that disabled veteran should continue to get the exemption. The problem was they just adopted the language for the seniors. So I think everybody would agree that most of the disabled vets that we see coming back now are much younger than 65. But under the existing law, if one of them passed away while in the program, their widow or widower would have to wait until they reached age 60 in order to take advantage of this. I might also point out that our standards require that once the widow or widower gets remarried, that the exemption ceases to exist. So in all reality, the widow or widower for a disabled veteran will never get to take advantage, in most cases, of this exemption because it will be much younger than the 60 years of age.
Representative Sisna?
Thank you, and perhaps we could have the sponsor's office respond to that, too.
Through the chair, Representative Sisna, we left the requirement for the widow, widower the same as it was currently in statute. It's not to confuse the bill anymore, and just kept the current statute as is, okay, and just raised the amount.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
I'm trying to figure out exactly what those income requirements are, which are referenced in the statute.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I do have those numbers. I did pull those out. 47,45,320A3A is $20,913 for a single person, and B is $28,053 for two people. So it's either $20,900 or $28,000.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Salmon, looked like you had a question.
I do have a question. This pertains to only one property that we're talking about, aren't we?
I believe it's primary residence.
If the individual has two property, then this applies to only one, right?
I'll let the sponsor's representative respond to that, but I believe it's primary residence.
Through the chair, Representative Salmon, it's just to the primary residence.
Thank you.
I think we'll go to Vicki Hamilton now from Craig. Good morning, Ms. Hamilton.
good morning. This is Vicki from the City of Craig. My comment would be that with the City of Craig probably being the only community on Prince of Wales that collects a property tax, that this would affect part of our economy if the property was increased for exemption up to the $250,000, and it would be the city's stand to remain at the $150,000 and to reinstate the payments from the state of Alaska to help supplement the taxes that are being exempt for the City of Craig's benefit there.
Well, thank you, Ms. Hamilton. I believe that's all the people that we have off net. Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to testify? Come on up, Kevin. Mr. Kevin Ritchie.
We got the presentations done in 15 minutes.
Pardon me?
Got the presentations done in 15
minutes. Kevin Ritchie with the Alaska Municipal League, and I just got this today, of course, and so it's a little scary in that we don't know exactly what the impacts are. You know, the bottom line is that whenever you change an exemption, if it's higher or lower, somebody else either benefits or pays on the local level. So, for example, if a benefit for $100,000 were provided to seniors, ultimately that $100,000 would have to be paid by somebody else in the community. You know, so it's a it's a shifting, and so it's important to know what those numbers are for us, and I think that's pretty key. And the second thing is that I know that around the state, there's been the Kenai Peninsula Borough, I think Juneau right now, is talking about changing senior benefits, and it's a huge issue locally. I'm concerned without involving municipalities with this particular language and having them understand what all this means right now, there, you know, could be sort of a firestorm being moved down the line to municipalities, which would give them something interesting to do all summer, but would be a very big issue for each one of the communities. So my reaction simply is that I think this needs to be really churned around a lot, and all of the impacts known, and the communities, you know, we'll get this information out to the communities, but I would hope to have a very substantial hearing process, because whether it happens in the legislature or locally, I'm sure it'll happen. But the reason it'll go locally is because municipalities still, of course, have the authority to maintain the program at a higher level, and so that issue will just get moved down the line a bit if this bill were to pass out right now. So that's why I'd like municipalities to have more information. And the last point, which is just sort of a good side comment, is really the way we got this way, you know, I mean, the reason that property taxes are probably an issue for a lot of people, both older and younger, is that they've been going up quite a bit. A good revenue sharing program right now, very substantial revenue sharing program, will have the biggest impact on taxes. And of course, the positive impact is that it affects everybody. It helps everybody, helps businesses, helps citizens. So that's just the commercial that goes along with the testimony. So thank you very much. And I'm happy to answer questions.
Any questions, Representative Ledoux?
Do you think it's possible that in the long run, as opposed to the short run, that this is actually going to result in more money going to the municipalities? Because doesn't it kind of phase out the exemption, which isn't needs-based?
Mr. Chair, if I'm reading this correctly, what I understand is that people currently receiving the exemption would continue to receive it. Disabled veterans now or in the future would have their exemption go from 150 to 250,000, and then people who became 65 after this bill passes, depending on their income, would either get the exemption or not, and so this and I'm not, and actually this I think is a very interesting bill. It could be something that municipalities embrace. It could be something that municipalities are concerned about. But I would urge you to bring them into the discussion and give them some time to kind of talk about it locally. And I realize this is right at the end of the session, but this is a big bill to have come up at this point.
Thank you.
Well, maybe it's not maybe more of a comment maybe for the end, but as if you look at the people who are hitting 65 and retiring, they've probably been in the salary range of 35 to 40. I'm talking like maybe teachers a $45,000 salary, and they're going to retire at what, 45, maybe 50-60% for two people. And you're living in a community where the, you know, even my hometown for some reason went up 15% last year. I don't know how they figure that, but I mean, your property values go up, and they bought a house 25 years ago for $40,000, and they just paid it off, and that same house is worth maybe 160 now, 180. They can't make ends meet. I'm just saying that when you're on a fixed income, we want them to stay home. We don't want to put them, at least in my hometown, we don't want to put them in a senior care assisted care living, because there's only a couple of places. I think Ketchikan is one. You can stay here in Juneau until you they can't handle you anymore, and then they send you to Ketchikan. I think it's nice if we were to try to leave them at home, Kevin. But and I see where the municipalities have a problem, and you know, and we're also, you know, we're toying with the municipal dividend this year. So what would you know? I think if this bill does come in, and again the local control, whether they, you know, can go higher, I guess, like Kenai, he's got a higher exemption anyway. Just a comment, I probably should have saved it till the end of the committee, because I think, you know, there's a time where you have to have a little sympathy, and I'm also, you know, sympathetic to the disabled vet, because that boy is in his 20s right now, and he hasn't even been able to generate any income. And if you look at the benefits, at least the my office gets, they've been cutting military benefits big time. I've had a guy who was 100% disability from Vietnam. That was, they cut him to, what, 75 or 80% of his disability. And the price of fuel going up and everything else. I know this is the first time in probably 15, 20 years that I've seen wood piles in front of senior homes this year in Haines. And I'm sure that that's not the same case everywhere. I mean, I imagine Juneau would be doing it, but they have fire burns. You know, they ban them here in Juneau. So I think this is one just one. And whether it makes it all the way through, I think at least we should show a little sympathy to as we rapidly approach that golden age.
Representative Sussman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Ritchie, can you tell me how many, approximately what kind of percentage of the municipalities around the state have property tax?
Oh, they all.
Through the chair, Steve Van Zandt, I've got the book in front of me. It's around 35 communities, but that's most of the people of the state. You know, in the bush, there's a lot of community cities of 100, 200 that just don't have a property tax base. But all of the major communities that you think of, you know, have a property tax, pretty much.
Follow up. So it's a number of communities, maybe not a huge percentage, but a number of communities, not just Anchorage.
With property tax?
Yeah.
Through the chair, yeah, real quickly, I could read them to you, but there's we can get you that list, or Steve Van Zandt can do it. But it's, you're right, it's most of all, every large community that I could think of has property tax.
90%?
3,000.
95% of the state?
I'd say population-wise, and Steve Van Zandt could probably give you a better figure, but I'm going to say 90% of the state easily.
Yeah. Paula?
And Mr. Chair, if we could ask that of Steve Van Zandt, that'd be really great.
Mr. Van Zandt?
Mr. Chairman, through the Chair, Representative Ledoux, there's 12 out of 16 boroughs that levy a property tax, and they're the largest boroughs. The four that do not levy one are the Northwest Arctic Borough, the Denali Borough, the Lake and Penn Borough, and the Aleutians East Borough. But every other borough does levy a property tax. There's also 13 of the cities in the unorganized borough that are large population centers that also levy a property tax. One of the cities that do not levy a property tax, which is the largest second-class city, is Bethel, but they do have a lot of other taxes. But I agree with Mr. Ritchie that we're probably looking at about 90% of the population of the state that have are subject to a property tax.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux?
Well, I've still got some problems with this bill. I mean, I agree with Representative Thomas that we ought to show sympathy for disabled veterans and for elderly people and so forth. But I also kind of believe that when people, it's really easy to say that we ought to show sympathy, but instead of us actually showing the sympathy by, you know, attaching a fiscal note to this thing and funding the program, you know, we're just saying, oh, we're sympathetic, so somebody else is going to pay the bill. I mean, and that's kind of like the feds do with taxes and stuff.
You mean like an unfunded mandate?
Yeah, kind of like an unfunded mandate.
Any other questions for Mr. Ritchie? Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
Shane Horan, Kenai.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Shane Horan, and I'm the assessor for the Kenai Peninsula Borough. And I guess I just, as Kevin articulated, I first saw this bill this morning upon my arrival here and haven't had a time to digest it thoroughly. But as Kevin mentioned, I would ask that you give us some time to digest this. And I think our initial concern for the Kenai Peninsula Borough is the, you know, mandatory exemptions and the unfunded mandate. What I would like to share with you is that most recently, we here in the Kenai Peninsula Borough, as you may know, have the senior citizen disabled veteran exemption as unlimited. So we go well beyond the $150,000 mandated cap. I would like to share that we presented to the Borough Assembly at our meeting earlier this month in capping, the mayor proposed capping the senior disabled veteran exemption at $200,000 and also offering the hardship exemption, which where the senior or disabled vet would pay no more than 2% of their gross household income for property taxes. That failed introduction, and currently at our next meeting we do have a proposed scenarios where the first $150,000 would be based on one's eligibility for the permanent fund, and then Kenai's exemption over that $150,000 would be based on 2 years residency and an absence of no more than 90 days. So we, of course, have a growing senior citizen and disabled veteran population. And again, I would just urge to give us some more time to digest this bill as proposed. And thank you.
I have a question, Shane.
Any questions for Mr. Horan?
I have one.
Co-chair?
Thank you. Representative Thomas here. Shane, I was wondering if you allow people to have an exemption if they own a home outside the state of Alaska and are there and they own a home outside and they retain a home here.
Through the chair, yes, we do, but the requirement that we have locally by ordinance is at least 183-day requirement, occupancy requirement, and that this be their primary residence and permanent place of abode.
Okay, thanks.
Any further questions for Mr. Horan? Representative Salmon.
I have a question. We had a
hold it till Tuesday. I don't know.
Statement earlier about the 46, 45, 3, 2, 0, 83 or something like that, that little section they're referring to, and that's the amount that they make. Why shouldn't that amount also go up? Because look at some of the teachers' retirement, you know. I mean, you know, 2,000, you're talking about 24,000 a year. I mean, you know, this person, I mean, 2,000 a year, right, in today's time, is not very much to live on, especially when you're over 65 and, you know, basically you can't, you know, if you're disabled or anything like that, you can't get a job. I mean, you know, it's hard to maintain a job. So, I think some of that section should be elevated also, you know, other than, you know, because...
Well, I think Mr. Horan probably has the borough that's the most elevated of any in the state. Would that be correct, Shane?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. We're the only municipality in the state of Alaska that has the exemption above and beyond the $150,000 state-mandated exemption, correct.
Any other questions for Mr. Rand? Thank you, Shane.
Thank you, sir.
Is there anybody in the audience that would wish to testify? Mike? We'll bring it back to the committee. I don't think we have anybody else out on back to the committee.
Mr. Chair, my office put together an amendment to this bill that responds to some of my own personal concerns about the bill, and I would like to find out what the kind of the will of the chairs is on this, because if we are thinking of moving this out today, then I'd like to move this amendment. And if not, I'd like to save the discussion for work over perhaps the interim to work with other to work with all of our communities and figure out what works.
I think it was our original intent to try to move the bill out today, but I think that we'd probably be doing a disservice to the cities and the borough if we didn't give them a few days to digest it before we move it. I think we'll be holding it over till next week.
Okay. Mr. Chair, could I make some comments?
Sure.
If that'd be satisfactory. Mr. Chair, as you know, I have been visiting communities and looking at kind of local economies, talking with municipal administrators, and have discovered how very important senior populations are and veterans populations. I agree absolutely with co-chair Thomas that that they are extraordinarily important to the communities. At the very same time, all of the communities that I've talked with are having real struggles in terms of trying to survive. And so and sort of simultaneously here, we have a period of time where I think we as a state are trying to decide whether or not the removal of the revenue sharing is a permanent thing or a temporary thing. Because if it's a permanent thing, then we've got to help communities figure out how in the world they're going to make it. And whether or not we want communities. Maybe we only want urban kind of hub places where we move most of the population into just a few towns around Alaska. Because that's kind of where it will go if we don't give these communities a chance to survive. And I think this goes straight to the heart of whether or not there's going to be revenues to work with in communities, because a lot of communities, that's the only thing they can get money from is property tax. And it's not just my community, who, by the way, I've corresponded with, who had some concerns about this, but they didn't think this was going to be heard today. So I think that may be true of other communities that didn't know this was going to be heard today.
Yeah, that's why we're going to carry it over till next week.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, I just think this is, I would hope that this committee really looks seriously at the Municipal League's testimony and really thinks of putting time in on this. This is us as a partner with the communities of the state. We've got to make sure that we allow as many communities to be as healthy as possible.
Is this closed?
Brief at ease. We need to move it today, or we can't hear House bills next week. So I think we're going to have to let State Affairs, we'll bring it up to the will of the committee, but I think if it's going to get tweaked, it's going to get fixed in State Affairs. So do you want to...
Or Mr. Chair, may be done there, too.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I think each committee has a responsibility, and Community and Regional Affairs... This bill fits in this committee as much as it does in any, and I think it's an incredible. We're striking at the very basic infrastructure of communities across the state, and I think it would be a great disservice to move this.
You were on the subcommittee, weren't you?
I never knew of a meeting.
What's the will of the committee?
I guess we can have an up or down vote on it. I'll make a motion to remove it from committee with individual CS HB 299.
I believe we have an amendment that's been offered.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
I think we need to...
Mr. Chair,
address that first.
I move amendment number one.
Object.
Thank you, and Mr. Chair, let me tell you what this amendment does is it moves essentially the program back to its present configuration, but raises the exemption to $200,000, which is my understanding what some municipalities are already thinking of doing because they believe that $150,000 is too low. Home values are going up so fast that it is really difficult, and I think municipalities are realizing that. So it would keep the disabled veteran and the widower in place, but it wouldn't link it to the senior citizen program model. And with all of the complications and questions that are unanswered at this point, it still would raise it, but not put in all those questions that are unanswered.
Representative Ledoux.
So do I understand that the difference between this and the CS is basically that instead of $250,000, you've got the $200,000, but then you eliminate the needs-based criteria,
right.
Which is actually even worse for the municipalities to eliminate that, isn't it?
Mr. Chair, to answer that question on the what this would do is that as long as you link it to the model that you've got, where you've got to get everybody's tax returns, is you increase the number of workers in each municipality, and that's as our own state assessor testified, that we don't even know what the costs are now. We know that there would be costs, but we don't know. In some towns, that would be a real hardship. There's a lot of other details here that were mentioned that haven't been flushed out yet. So somebody's going to have to figure that out, and it would be better, since each community I've gone to does things a little differently, we really should be finding out from each community kind of how this fits with them, or at least the ones that are wanting to weigh in.
Any other comment? You maintain the objection?
Yeah.
Roll call, please, Madam Clerk, on the amendment.
Amendment 1. Representative Cisna?
Yes.
Representative Salmon?
Yes.
Representative Cox?
No.
Representative Ledoux?
No.
Representative Newman?
No.
Co-Chair Olson?
No.
Co-Chair Thomas?
No.
Amendment fails. Brings us back to the subcommittee substitute. What's the will of the committee?
I thought I made a motion.
Or did we? Did, but it was, we had to get rid of it.
Oh. like saying up and down the vote, out of courtesy to the sponsor, I'll make a motion that we move CSHB 299 version 24-LS08 23/Y from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Object.
Roll call, please.
Representative Salmon?
Yes.
Representative Cott?
Yes.
Representative Ledoux?
Yes.
Representative Cisna?
No.
Representative Newman?
Yes.
Co-Chair Olson?
Yes.
Co-Chair Thomas?
Yes.
Bill moves on to state affairs. And with that, we're adjourned.